I'd like to welcome everybody here this morning. It's been a blessing to be here. For a message this morning, if you'd like to turn to Psalm 90, I'll be looking at a few verses there. As you're turning there, I'll kind of explain a little bit where I was led to this. And also a prayer request. I was asked to go to Indiana next weekend and do a couple talks for the youth there. And so this is one of the messages that I was going to share. It's probably going to change a bit. But one reason I'm explaining this is, for one, I'd really appreciate if church would pray for me and Jesse as we go. And then also, I had a really hard time. This message is in the middle of two others, and it really almost needs the first one and the second one to totally complete it. So I hope that I can help it to apply here. And I'd also like to say, because of that, I hope it doesn't come across as accusing or whatever, because some of that I kind of explained in the first message to the youth. But I am going to just say it clearly and strongly, and I do believe that it's what I'm going to say is true, but I just kind of wanted to give that for an introduction. So Psalm 90, I'm not going to read the whole psalm because I have a lot of other material, and one thing I was going to say is I hope I don't influence your voting too much if I go for 2 hours here. It's not normal, so hopefully that doesn't happen. But Psalm 90 is a psalm written by Moses. I like how my Bible says it here. It says, a prayer of Moses, the man of God. And the first 11 verses, he's talking about how great God is, how small and insignificant man is, and how life is pretty meaningless, full of suffering, without God's blessing upon your life. And then verses 13 through 17 are a request for God's mercy and asking God to bless them and what life can be like when God is blessing your life. And I'll just read verses 16 through 17. It says, let thy work appear unto thy servants and thy glory unto their children. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish thou the work of our hands upon us. Yea, the work of our hands establish thou it. And in between this, how meaningless life is and insignificant, and how life can have meaning if you have God's blessing upon your life, is verse 12. And verse 12 says, so teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. So I picture Moses here saying what I just said. This is how it is. This is how we want it to be. So, dear God, please teach us how to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. This is what we want. Teach us how to have that and how to get that. And show us your ways. I'd like to apply this verse here, verse 12, in a real practical and specific way to the specific subject of video games. And, you know, this verse could apply to a lot of things, but this talk I'm going to have in Indiana, I was going to talk quite a bit about technology and how it's affecting the church and individuals' lives. And part of that is video games. It's almost embarrassing that here you open up the Bible, you read this, and then that's the subject you have to talk about. But it is a real problem. It's something that's going on right now. It's something that I think that we need to look at seriously and deal with. And, you know, it's no secret that it's a problem, not only in churches, but also just in the world. The world is even getting concerned with this subject. And I think it's very significant when it comes to Anabaptist circles, because I see video games as a major breach in the wall. You're talking about a group of people that used to be known for not having television, had a pretty strong wall around them, and now I see this big, huge hole that the enemy can get right through. And so I think it's significant to Anabaptist churches. It's an interesting quote that I came across, talking about television, but I think it applies to video games also. It says, television is an invention that permits you to be entertained in your own living room by people you wouldn't have in your house. A guy named David Frost said that. And I believe that's the same with video games. It brings things directly into your home that you would never allow but it's a sneaky way of getting it in there. When I'm talking about video games, I can't cover nearly all the aspects of it. You know, you all probably have different thoughts when I say video games. Some people might picture a Game Boy. Some people might picture a smartphone. Others might picture a Wii or Xbox or PlayStation. I'm mainly going to focus on video games that young adults get sucked into. And especially, I'd like to challenge the youth to take a serious look at this. Even though I'm going to try and word it a little bit differently for the whole church, it is more directed towards youth and the types of things that they're facing in their lives. And I have to say something here. I have to apologize. It's printed out really weird, and I'm having a hard time following my notes here. To start off with, I'd like to just give a brief history of video games to help us understand how they started, where they came from, where they're heading also. And there's just way too much information to cover everything. But I'd like to just say right off the bat that some of the information I got, most of it came from two sources. One's called Little Light Ministries, and the other one was from a video called Captivated, and it's made by a group called Media Talk 101. And so a lot of what I'm going to say, I'm not going to stop every time and say I got that here, I got that there, but that's where a lot of the information came from. It's not original with me. So just a quick timeline. You know, it's tempting when you get on a subject like this to just get mad and just say, you know, video games are stupid. Why do you do them? But I'd like to go through and explain some things, educate about it, and that's why I'm doing this. So in 1958 is when they very first started, basically, and it started off with a little dot that basically just bounced back and forth on the screen. That was the first thing. And then they made a few little improvements on that where you could actually manipulate the dot, how it bounced back and forth. And people were immediately intrigued with that. Then in 1972, Atari got started, and that big game originally was Pong, which was kind of like that same concept. And then it went from there to, you know, one of the big ones that probably some of the older people recognize is Pac-Man and, like, Donkey Kong, games like that. 1985, Nintendo got really big and improved on video games. They introduced a concept that's kind of key that's important, is they introduced a storyline with recognizable characters that had personality, and that kind of plays into how they affect people. 1993, a game called Wolfenstein 3D was the first game that introduced what they call first-person perspective. So until then, everything was kind of, you were looking at things sideways, you were running this way, but this was the first major game that you could look down the barrel of a gun and shoot people or things looking right down the barrel or right whatever you're doing. So that was a big change in video games. 1995, PlayStation came out, and the graphics were improving all the time. 2001, Xbox came out with more improved first-person stuff. They really got that down good. And in 2006, Wii was introduced with the concept of rather than just holding a controller, it actually followed your body movement. So that's getting more and more improved also. That's just a real quick timeline of how that happened. Currently, there's a tremendous amount of options. The graphics just really are amazing. You can't deny that. More recently, one of the big things is online gaming, where you're connected with people all over the world playing games. And it's kind of going a little bit more toward the combination of video game / movie, where there's a storyline, you're interacting, you're kind of determining the outcome, and you get inside this thing, and you're connected with other people. And it's getting pretty crazy how it works. You know, that's just a real brief outline of how it works. When I was going through that, I pictured a computer nerd thinking, well, actually, in 1985, Sega did this. I didn't cover everything, and I wasn't intending to. But that's what the majority of people have seen, how this has come out to the public and how it's working. I thought I'd share just quickly my personal experience with video games. You know, I think I was probably about 10 years old when we got an Atari. grandparents bought it for us. We thought it was the greatest thing. And so we had that, and my older brother had Pac-Man, and I had Donkey Kong. We played it as much as we could. Our parents did monitor how much we played. I see they're here. It's nice to have them here. But every once in a while, you'd go on a little binge, and I remember my older brother with Pac-Man one time. He sat there, and what I remember was he went through the whole night. He's just sitting there with a blanket around him playing, and the ghosts were like, couldn't hardly see him, and he's just going around like crazy. That's a memory I have. One feeling I have when I remember, and it's just as clear as ever, is the feeling of just, I don't know how to explain it other than just rage or hatred of waiting for my turn. It was just, you didn't want to have to wait for this other person. You wanted your turn, and that was a real negative feeling that it gave me and that I remember with friends, cousins, or whatever. I had a friend who would invite me over to his house, and I'd go over there thinking we're going to do something, and he'd say, you want to play a video game? Sure. I'd get my turn. I'd play about 2 minutes and get killed, and then he'd get on, and he'd play for 2 hours and sit there and watch him, and it was pretty boring. But that's a little bit my experience, and I went to college, and I had roommates that had a Nintendo, and we played that. I didn't play it as much as they did, but one thing that we would do is we would go over to the cafeteria at Boise State College, and they had an arcade in there, and we'd play this game called Street Fighter II, which basically picked your person, and that was still sideways stuff, and you fought each other, and I was not really very good at that either, but I had a little stint with a little sumo wrestler where I got the tomahawk moved down so that I could just, for a little while, I was winning. But one of the friends had the game, or he'd make everybody mad because he'd pick this lady named like Chung Lee and just kill everybody. But it was a lady, so it was extra worse for the guys. But there was another game there that I remember that I was not a Christian at the time, but this game kind of caught my attention. I still remember it, and it was just really, Street Fighter was a bit, it was violent, but it was a little bit gory. But this one was called Mortal Kombat. And just lots of blood, and just, I was in college, but it kind of creeped me out. And I kind of remember just, this is a little weird side thing, but it kind of even smelled weird. You walk by it, and it's like, that's just a weird video game. But lots of blood and guts, and it seemed kind of demonic. And but, you know, comparing that game to what there is out there now today, that wouldn't even be considered much of anything. So that was that's my experience. And when I got married, didn't want video games in the house, and we didn't have them. But then some point in time, children's grandparents bought them a Wii. It wasn't the grandparents that are here, by the way. Got a Wii, and I wasn't sure if I wanted it in the house, but I was kind of won over by the thought that, yeah, you're actually going to be moving. You know, the winters are kind of long here. And so I kind of gave into that. And after a short while, I forget how long we had it. We had some good times with it. We played some games. But very quickly we saw that, you know, this is having a very negative effect on our children. And we got rid of it. We tried limiting the time on it. That didn't work. And then we just got rid of it. And very glad we did. And I'm sorry that we let it in the house. The whole reason I'm sharing this is just show you a little bit where I'm coming from. I've experienced quite a bit of it. I haven't done a lot of the latest games. But I know how it feels to really want to do it. I know how it feels to play the games. And so anyways, just thought I'd share that. And I also want to say I'm not speaking on the subject to condemn people, especially the youth. I want to talk about it to help give knowledge, because we have to make good decisions. We have to have knowledge. We have to have understanding. And so that's why I'm bringing this up, and hopefully you'll make your wise choices. So the question would be, what is wrong with playing video games? Well, like many things, they wouldn't be that big of a deal if they could just stay innocent. If they could just stay at an innocent level, wouldn't be that big of a deal. But unfortunately, they often don't work that way. And like with most things, they're fun and interesting. Well, like most things that are fun and interesting, Satan has to get a hold of them, and he ruins them. He takes them too far. He takes them to a level that they shouldn't go to, and to extremes, and he turns them into tools of destruction. And I'd like to just say here that, you know, Satan is the bad guy. It's an obvious thing, but he is the one that ruins fun. He's the one that takes things that could be interesting, could be fun, he takes them too far. So I want to, God doesn't need me to defend him, but I just want to clarify that God is the good guy. Satan is the killjoy. He's the one that takes the fun out of everything. He takes it too far, and that's not God. God's not the one that does that. God's the one that brings real joy. And so if people want to get upset, it bothers me when people get upset with God, or they blame God, or they try and make God look like he just wants people to be bored. It's not that way. Satan is the bad guy, and he always will be. I'd like to let the video game industry kind of speak for itself. And so I'm going to read a PlayStation advertisement to you. And this is a video that they put out as an advertisement. And the way it happens is it's a video, and this guy's walking down the street, and it shows him talking. And then as he's talking, it switches to other faces and other people. But it's all one dialogue, but it's kind of coming through a whole bunch of different people. And this is what it says. It says, "For years I've lived a double life. In the day I do my job, ride the bus, roll up my sleeve with the holy polloi. But at night I live a life of exhilaration, of missed heartbeats and adrenaline. And in truth, and if truth be known, a life of devious virtue. I won't deny it. I've been engaged in violence, even indulged in it. I've maimed and killed adversaries, and not merely in self-defense. I've exhibited disregard for life, limb, and property, and savored every moment of it. You may not think it to look at me, but I've commanded armies and conquered worlds. And though in achieving these things I have set morality aside, I have no regrets. For though I've lived a double life, at least I can say that I've lived." And then it ends with the slogan for PlayStation, which says, "Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation." And I just think that's a fitting way. They're not trying to warn us. They're trying to mock people. But it just says, "Do not underestimate the power of a PlayStation." And that's kind of what I'm trying to get across today, is that very concept. Don't underestimate the power of this stuff. Brings up some interesting questions in their little dialogue there. Can you set morality aside? Can you live a double life? Appreciated Ted's devotions this morning in Sunday school. It just made it clear that you can't. You just can't. Can you indulge in savor and violence as a Christian, especially as an Anabaptist Christian? Can you do that kind of stuff? I think the answer is obvious. But, you know, this is how they're advertising their product. And just for a reminder and a little explanation for those that might not be real familiar with it, PlayStation is, they provide the product that plays games. They didn't just pick out one of the radical games and say this is a bad game. It's the actual device that you play the games in. So they're assuming that this is kind of what these are going to be used for. For me, myself, everybody has to make their own decision, but just based off that one advertisement, I wouldn't give a dime to that company. I wouldn't want to support that. And I'm sure some people might think, well, okay, that's PlayStation, but we, you know, they're nice. You picture these bright, happy little blue screen with green things on it and stuff. But, you know, I kind of thought that too. But I didn't realize we had so many. There's some extremely violent games that it has that I wouldn't even want to describe in front of you here. But and then just a little side note, this isn't just, I didn't just grab this just for rumor or whatever. It just so happened when I was looking a little bit. And into a lot of details, but basically love hotels are hotels used for prostitutes. That's about all I'll say. Rent a room for a few hours. That didn't work out, so then they went into the video game. The type of character that some things like that, and people, flags go up. Well, what are we going to do? You're getting kind of radical. You know, you start, like we talked in Sunday school, where do you draw that line on associating with other people? But, you know, some people go extreme and say, well, pretty soon you're going to stop eating ice cream. You're going to stop swimming when it's hot. Where are you going to draw the line? And, you know, that type of thinking, it just, I guess I get tired of that. I'm not accusing people here of doing that, but that type of thinking that you just, something maybe is a little bit convicting, something's clear, so throw out another extreme and dismiss it all. It's just, it makes no sense. You know, take a lame extreme and apply it so that you can justify sin. And it just doesn't work. It's not the right thing to do. And, you know, I don't think you have to worry if somebody decides to stop doing something like that, that they're going to go back to the 1800s and just live a miserable life. It's about standing up for what's right, and it's important to be able to look at that clearly. I'd like to share a little survey I did just to bring out 2 points. I don't think that people, well, I'm going to just make a statement. I don't believe that people in general admire people that are good at playing video games. I recognize that's an opinion, but I don't think anybody's probably ever gotten a card from their grandparents that said, hey, keep working hard at those video games. Grandparents don't care like that about them. You probably wouldn't want to, at a job interview, bring up that you're really good at video games as one of your qualifications. That's the type of thing I'm talking about. It's just not admirable in that sense. So with this in mind, I just decided to ask some youth girls the question, you know, do they find it admirable if a young man is really good at playing video games? And the answer was an emphatic no, not just a no, but like the opposite, like no way. But one girl said something that I want to point out. One girl said that, she likes computer geeks. She likes guys that know how to use technology, understand it, and are able to use it well. And to me, this brings up a good point. But she also did say that she doesn't admire somebody that wastes a lot of time playing video games. So just real, the one point is that for the guys, that it doesn't, girls aren't impressed with it, and you know, that should matter to you. I'm not trying to give you pointers on how to get girls, but it should matter to you. And it does matter to you. Typical guy response to that would be, well, I don't care. Well, the only reason we say that is because we don't know what else to say. You actually do care, and you should care. But the other point that I was glad that this one girl said this is you know, there's nothing wrong with being a computer geek. And, you know, that's kind of a weird term. But it is admirable to be able to use technology and to use it well. And, you know, Mennonites have embraced technology, and I believe the original vision would have been to use it for good. So there's a purpose for it. And it's supposed to be used for good. It is admirable to be able to use it well, use it in good ways. We use it all the time. And but the point is that this isn't a debate between technology versus no technology. It's not a debate between athletes and computer geeks. Which one are you going to be? It's a moral issue. We're talking about using technology. We're not, okay, sorry, I lost my place here. So I'll just repeat this real quick. It's not an issue of geeks versus hunters, hunter athletes, so they're all different. Old school versus new school. It's a moral issue of right and wrong. So back to some facts about video games. What makes a successful video game? Well, experts say that there's three things that are required for a video game to be what they would consider successful. People want to buy it, and it has to have three elements to it. One is sound, or the first one is sound and fury, which is basically noises. It has to have noise, music, and lights to get your attention. It has to have some type of death and destruction, and also it has to have computer control that's effective. They use the word intuitive, and what that means is that when you want to move the thing, the gun or whatever, this way, it moves right where you want it to, whether it's with your thumbs or with your body. It's intuitive, and the best description I could have for that is, if you haven't done video games, it's like running an excavator. When you turn the thing, you want it to go right where you want it to go, reach out, and pretty soon, if you get used to it, it's almost like you're just reaching it with your hand almost, but it's intuitive. It's working from the commands that you're giving it. So they claim that it has to have those three things. And, you know, obviously not all of them have death, but most of them have destruction. But remember, this is for the ones that are really popular, and these, I'm talking about the ones that will really suck you in. So then another question is, why are video games so popular? And experts say that they meet three basic physiological needs, and the one is autonomy, which is freedom to choose. And that's, you know, you're in control, you're deciding what's going to happen, where you're going to go, I'm choosing what happens next. And then it satisfies what they call mastery, which is feeling like you're good at something, feeling like you're competent, like you can accomplish something. And then the third thing is social interaction. So it gives you these three things, but I like to look at those three things from a Christian perspective, because at first, well, is that all bad? You know, choice, mastery, social interaction, it doesn't all sound bad. I like to first look at mastery, and, you know, it takes time to get good at something. It takes effort, it takes work. And so people are spending lots of time mastering these things, but people don't do that for no reason. There has to be some kind of motivation, and there's rewards, and in video games, there's rewards for your efforts. You know, they usually start you at a lower level, and you get to a certain spot, and you get rewards. And then it gets a little bit harder, and you get more rewards. And that doesn't seem like that big of a deal. It makes sense if that's how it works. But the problem is, as you're doing this, it affects your brain. And basically, I can't explain all that, but the experts say that what it actually does when you get into it is it's actually doing the same thing that drugs do to your brain. It releases dopamine, which causes pleasure. When you get this reward, when you feel like you've accomplished something, you get this little hit of dopamine, and after a while, you get more and more into it, and that's how it actually works in your brain. So it kind of looks innocent on the surface level, but that's how they say it works, and I believe it. Because just like with drugs, you know, sometimes people do, well, you never know. Some people do it once and they die, but some people do it. It takes them a while to get addicted. But you see a lot of the same symptoms. When people that are, I'm talking extreme, I know this isn't hopefully a problem, but extreme cases, people start neglecting their, I'm talking about video games again, people start neglecting their families. They stop caring for their hygiene. They have fits of rage. They withdraw from society. And, you know, one man, this is a little bit for the parents, one man that I was doing this research, he said that if you threaten to take away a young man's video games that is somewhat addicted, you should pretty much plan on war, because it would be like taking drugs away from a drug addict. They're going to defend it. They're going to become angry. They're going to be very sensitive to it. So that's to be expected from somebody who's been involved in this a lot. And I know of a couple people firsthand that, one person firsthand, one person secondhand, people we know, that were in that situation. Guys stopped taking showers, playing video games, neglecting his kids, everything. It's just gets really nasty when people get sucked into that. And it's like I said, it's not this little isolated problem. It's actually in the God's World News magazine that we get here at school. I mentioned that in South Korea they're considering passing laws regulating how much people can play video games because it's becoming a problem, a real problem there. And then, as Nevin Good mentioned, that the average gamer is about 29 years old. I've heard 29 to 33-year-olds are the most common age. So when talking to the youth, hopefully most of this is preventative, you know. You guys, if the average gamer is 29 to 33 years old, you know, that's, for most of you guys, that's, you know, whatever, 10 years from now, that this might be a temptation or something that you're dealing with all the way up until then. And what a shame that would be if people, that, well, it is a shame that people are doing this and they have kids in the home and children in the home and they're doing this kind of thing. So to me, that's talking about the point of that's what's going on in your mind. That's why it's addictive. It's because of this sense of accomplishment. So really, to me, what that shows is that it actually ends up taking away your choice. So that autonomy really goes away once you're sucked in, and you're making choices, but only when you're hooked up and you're inside this thing. So then the social interaction part, that it satisfies. What kind of interaction it actually is that? Well, there's two aspects to that. With online gaming, you're socially connecting to a whole bunch of people you've never met. And I would think that'd be fairly alarming in Anabaptist circles that have typically been very leery of socializing with people on a friendly basis outside of the circle, even to the extreme of maybe even basketball and things like that. Well, now, like I said, I think there's a breach in the wall that, you know, there's people that can get connected to people all over the world, and what's bringing them together is typically a violent video game. And just one, for example, there's one called the World of Warcraft, and it has about 11 million players worldwide that are linked together. And for people that have tried to guard themselves against outside influences like that, to me that's pretty alarming that is potentially there. And and then the type of people you're socializing with in that way is pretty scary. The other side of the social interaction thing is for people that aren't on the online stuff or connected with other people, typically what can happen is people will stop socializing in the normal way. You know, people will withdraw themselves from normal activity. And, you know, when I'm saying this, I'm not talking about shy people or people that, you know, want to just have a little bit of quiet time by themselves. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there always has to be big groups socializing all the time. But what I'm talking about is people that used to or normally are socializing in situations start withdrawing themselves, stop getting together with other people, because they'd rather play a video game. That, to me, would show signs of addiction and signs of heading in the wrong direction. And, you know, the bottom line is, I keep saying video games, but the problem is our sin nature. And this actually, you know, Jesus said it's not what's on the outside, but what's on the inside. And evil thoughts and all these things come from within. Video games is just a tool to draw that stuff out, to make you more self-centered, to make you more violent, to make you more antisocial. It's just drawing that out of you. So you can't, you have to guard against the video game, but I think it's important to realize that Satan's pulling the wrong strings, and that's why it amplifies all that stuff. So people are becoming addicted, they're not socializing like they should. And what for? What is the point of it all? And what it boils down to is so that they can play a game. And I'll add, usually a very stupid game, a phony game that doesn't count. When you're done, when it's game over, it doesn't matter. It doesn't count for anything. It's just the game's over or you won. And that's it. That's the ultimate reward right there. And in the meantime, it's potentially messing with your brain, your mind, causing you to, increase some of these things that we struggle with. Anger, they're naturally there that we struggle with. Pulling those out, wasting time and energy, neglecting real life things that need to be done. And, at this point, I'm sure some people are thinking, man, when can you just relax? You know, is it that serious? What about online chess? What about cards? What about Tetris? What about Farmville? What about just spacing out every once in a while? What's wrong with that? And, those are good questions, and there's no way I can answer all those. I'm talking about one specific thing here. Like I said earlier, you can't justify it. No, two wrongs don't make it right. You can't say, well, oh, yeah, okay, but there's this over here, so it cancels out. It just doesn't work that way. The bottom line is for anybody, whether it's violent video games or whether they're – watch this thing with this older lady, totally addicted to Farmville. She couldn't – she's getting sick, and she just – it was just crazy. Basically, she was cheating, making fake accounts so she could get more little phony little virtual pigs and stuff. It sounds funny, but it's crazy. So the bottom line is if you have a struggle – if you have an idol in your life, you've got to get rid of that. You've got to run from it. And if you're constantly trying to escape reality, that's a problem. That's sin, and that needs to be dealt with. So we can't try and justify ourselves. So then, what does this do to our brains? That's another question, and I was attempting to – I'm going to work on that a little bit, but I was going to attempt to explain that, but the truth is I can't. I'm still trying to understand it. But the bottom line is that it does affect your brain. Research shows that there's really no question. It's just a matter of how to explain that, and it affects it in negative ways. It changes your brain activity. And the thing that scared me the most when I was looking at that is it was saying that it affects it, but tests have shown that even when you stop playing it for a while later, your brain is still in a little bit of a different state. It affects people's emotions. It affects people's ability to concentrate. People that play games, it's proven that they're more easily angered, anxious, fatigued. And all the while, like I said earlier, while this is happening, you're getting little hits of dopamine and pleasure for things that aren't really being accomplished. So the other aspect is violence. Talked about that a little bit already. But this is another point that really should hit Anabaptists. Ted this morning mentioned non-resistance. This violence, most video games are violent. It's just the bottom line. And a verse that I've read before, but didn't really stand out to me. This person pointed it out. Psalm 11:5 says, "The Lord trieth the righteous, but the wicked and him that loveth violence, his soul hateth." And that's very clear and very sobering. The Lord, those that loveth violence, his soul hateth. Christians should not love violence. And one thing I've heard is, I just try to avoid the ones where you're actually shooting people. But isn't shooting people, animals, aliens, demons, if you're just taking pleasure in killing something randomly like that, is that not taking pleasure in violence? I don't see how it wouldn't be. I could see justifying that, well, we hunt, but to enjoy killing stuff, I mean, that's not why I hunt. And I understand there's stories where, I shot it 3 times and it kept running and stuff, but I don't believe that can be used as a justification. I don't personally, that's not where I get my joy in hunting, is the actual taking the life of an animal like that. But question to ask yourself, do you take pleasure in virtually killing things and destroying things? That's a pretty sobering question, and it's a serious question. Then the other thing is, does this violence have an effect on people? The quick answer is, of course it does. To summarize one study that was done, basically it said, you know, we get good at doing what we do often. And another thing was that with video games, it's especially with the movement ones, that's the way people learn best, is they see something and then they copy it. They mimic it. That's how we learn. So, you know, we get good at what we do often, so if we're doing violent things, surely that would have an effect on us. You know, the obvious one for me, a tennis player gets good at serving by practicing serving. After a while, they don't even think about it. They have muscle memory. When they get into a game, they're not thinking, okay, now I got to throw the ball. They just, it comes naturally. So naturally, if you're using video games in these in inappropriate ways, it's going to affect your overall mind and body and everything. And there's a few real tough things that a person would have to argue against to prove this wrong. And the one is flight simulators. I was going to ask somebody, but you can basically get trained on a flight simulator. They're so realistic. I did a little bit of research, and the one ad said, you know, keep up on your training, improve your piloting skills by using this flight simulator. That's how accurate they are, and that's how effective they are. So if somebody would want to try and prove that games don't affect me, they'd have to prove that doesn't work. And that, to me, makes no sense. The other thing, talking about violence, is the military uses violent video games to desensitize soldiers. That's something that they do, and obviously they're not going to waste their time doing it if it's not effective. So I don't think there's any way that could be dismissed or justified. Another thing that goes along with violence is just how evil the majority of games are. And, you know, just to name a few, and I didn't just go on a list and filter through and pick out bad ones. This is just the first things that popped up. Actually, I got this off the video. There's some that he listed like that. But God of War, Diablo, EverQuest, which is EverQuest Seeds of Destruction is what it's called, Dark Souls. And then one that kind of surprised me was Transformers. When I was a kid, there was commercials on TV, Transformers. It was Transformers More Than Meet the Eye. They weren't that big a deal. I didn't think they were robots that turned into cars and stuff. But then this one, it's called Transformers. So this is an example. If we had video games and I saw one in my house laying there, said Transformers as a parent, I probably wouldn't have thought much of it. But you look at it a little bit closer, it's Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. And then I watched a trailer on it, and this is how it starts, and it has the kind of demonic voice saying it. It says, battle lines are drawn, sides are chosen, the fallen will strike. The last great hour is upon us. And it gives the challenge, join the fight online. And I watched a few trailers, watched one on Halo, and it's a popular game. And all I can say is it's just, wow, it's like, it's creepy, it's weird, it's intense. Lots of spiritual overtones. There's a lot of, it's kind of good versus evil, but it's like, it's demonic is what it is. And it's like, you're going to save the world. And it's definitely violent. And that's one thing for parents that maybe young people wouldn't want you to know, is you can go on and watch trailers on the video games. If you're not sure, just go watch a trailer on it. It's going to tell you what it's about, what their intentions are, and what they're going to be doing. The other aspect is the money. People are spending tremendous amounts of money on it. And, you know, we're supposed to be good stewards of our money. Halo 3 in 2007 set a net record. It made $170 million within the first 24 hours that it was released. And then in 2010, Call of Duty Black Ops sold $360 million worth of their product in the first 24 hours. And then it ended up selling $1 billion worth shortly after that. So, you know, you hear about taxes, you hear about hard times, you hear about the economy, and then people are spending billions of dollars on video games. We has $1.4 trillion in assets, and last year they made $7.2 billion. And when I hear these numbers and I think about the money, what comes to my mind is when Jesus, people are standing before Jesus and they say, when, Lord, when did we see you naked? When did we see you hungry? When did we see you in prison? And, you know, that kind of money is getting thrown into that stuff. So question to ask is some of that your money? Were you a contributor to that last year? And like we talked about in Sunday school, where do you draw the line? Everybody has to make their own decision. But it's pretty serious stuff. I also think of the song that I've heard, you know, can you hear the sound, the song of the children crying out, saying, who will help me? And then the money is going to this type of a thing. So I know I've looked briefly, just briefly at video games, and I'll just be honest, I was a little flustered this morning. Hopefully I can get a little more polished on that. But you know, there's lots of questions unanswered. But I just really hope that you'll look at this seriously. Pursue your own answers to your questions. You know, what about Farmville? What about this game? What about that game? Research it yourself. I sure don't have all the answers. But you know that PlayStation commercial, some questions. Can Christians live a double life? They would kind of claim that you could. Can Christians set morality aside? Should Christians be entertained or indulge in violence? I think the obvious... rebellion. People can say, yeah, you can't do that, but I'm going to do it anyways. That's just rebellion. That's all there is to it. There's a certain place for not sure, trying to understand things, but when you know and you just do it anyways, it is rebellion. James 3:12 says, doth the fountain send forth at the same place both sweet and bitter water? It doesn't. You know, what a shame it is that people, and here I'm like I said earlier, I'm not accusing, I'm just saying this matter-of-factly. It's a shame that there's people spending real time, real money, neglecting real people to fight worthless, phony wars, saving planets that don't exist to help people that don't exist, when all the while there's real battle going on, there's real people being neglected, there's real people in need, and people are called to help, and they're not showing up. They're showing up playing... pretend games. And I heard just in closing here, a little challenge for the youth, and it's an interesting thing I just heard about this man that went to Turkey to look at the land. He's going to be doing a Bible study on Galatians and some other books. And he got to Galatia, and he noticed that it was a flat plain area, and that this, where they lived was just out in an area that was flat. So there's no natural defense in this place. And he was like, how in the world did these guys survive here for so many years? Because apparently the time period and stuff he was looking at, they had survived for like a couple hundred years. And the archaeologist that he was with said, well, they fought different. He said, well, how did they fight? He said, well, what they would do is when they would come out to battle, they would bring their wives and their children with them. And they'd get out there, and they'd say, you know, they'd explain to their family, we're going to go fight these guys here. If we lose, you guys are going to have to go be with them. You're going to change your last name. Wives, afraid to think what they're going to do to you. But if we lose, they're going to get you. If we win, you're going to get to come home with me. I'm going to be able to take you guys home, and we'll go back to home and live the way we always have. And he said that they fought differently, and they were successful for hundreds of years. But it's because they had something to fight for. And I guess that's my challenge to the youth in particular. You don't live in just your own little world. It's not just you. You're fighting for the future of the church. You're fighting for yourself, your siblings. And if you think about it like that, when we just think about ourselves and our own little world, we fight differently. But when you see the big picture, when you see what's going to happen 10 years from now, if hypothetically I keep doing this, I guarantee my younger siblings are going to probably follow my path and do the same thing. And or are you going to fight and defend and fight a real fight, help real people? You know, if my hope would not be that if there's people that need to give up video games, that they would just give up video games for a different hobby. It's not about trading one for the other. Some people think that you can have, I don't know, it's this weird word I just thought of this morning, but a holy hobby, where you just waste all your time doing something that people aren't, you can't really be too critical about that. But it's more, you got to get a bigger picture than that. You got to be engaged in a real battle. You have a real commander, Jesus. There's real people that need to be saved. 1 Corinthians 16:13 says, "Watch ye, stand fast in the faith. Quit ye like men, be strong." And for the youth, I'd just like to encourage you, be leaders right now. A lot of you guys are, 18, 20, 23. When you accepted Christ as your Savior, you accepted Him personally as your Savior. You don't have to wait on this particular type of subject. You don't have to wonder what mom and dad are going to do with the information. What are you going to do with information? What steps are you going to take? And I guarantee you that if you take the right steps, if you follow Jesus, you will receive real rewards, eternal rewards, rewards here on earth. You'll receive real joy and real peace. I'm not saying that it'll be easy, and it for sure won't be as quick and easy as some of the other things that Satan offers, but it will be the real thing, and it won't be an artificial environment that's lived in. That's all I have. Maybe we could bow our heads for prayer. Dear Father in heaven, we thank you for this day. Thank you for your mercy and grace. Thank you for your patience with us as we learn. Thank you for your word. And thank you for each one that's here today. And just pray that we'll take what we heard all the way from devotions, Sunday school, and songs, and message, and just apply it to our hearts and not rebel against you, but to be obedient and follow your voice and to recognize how good you are. And just thank you for all your many blessings. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, I did go over some, but I'd like to open it up for any testimonies people might have. Yeah, I appreciate those thoughts. Okay, if there's no others, let's stand our feet. And Dan, would you mind leading us to prayer?